96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday, August 25th, and it's a little after 11 a.m. in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we talk about diabetes. The other day, I was missing for an entire week, and people were calling and buzzing my phone, where is C.A. Nuri? And I said, don't worry, I promise to explain everything. I promise to explain why I was missing. And the reason I was missing is because I almost died. I was in intensive care, ICU, in doctor's hospital for 6 days. And today I actually have the doctor who serviced me while I was in hospital and who is going to explain how is it that C.A. Nuri ended up in a diabetic coma, completely out on my back, out cold, not knowing who, where, what is I am. And today I have Dr. Diana or Diane?
Diana
Bannister. I'm putting the mic a little closer for me. Bannister, who was the physician who serviced me whilst I was in doctor's hospital. And I gave her permission to go into some detail on what happened to me. And before all of that, I wanted to introduce herself to establish how she's a physician and what is her specialty. And then I'm going to have her explain what is diabetes. What is this diabetic coma I fell in and how close I was to actually dying, right? So that's what the conversation is about. So you can join in today and call me and say, thank God that God intervened and pause and say, no, not yet. Not yet. C.A. Nuri is going to be here a little longer on this earth to entertain everybody. So I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Bannister.
Yes.
Thank you very much for taking out some time just to spend with me. And to basically to explain what happened to me last week whilst I was completely out.
Right. So good morning to you, Mr. Nuri, and it's good to see you. You're looking very well.
Yes, I do look well, eh? I didn't look good throughout a week, though.
And good morning to your listening audience. My name is Dr. Diana Bannister. As Mr. Nuri had previously mentioned, I am an internist. So that is the medical specialty that deals with the management of chronic, complex medical conditions in the adult, of which diabetes is included. And we work primarily in the hospital setting, but we also cater to persons in the ambulatory and outpatient settings as well.
Good. So protocol already being established. What exactly is diabetes?
Right. So diabetes is a chronic condition in which the body is unable to control or regulate the amount of glucose in the blood. Glucose is the energy currency of the body. It is what the body utilizes to carry out all its important functions. And insulin is, you can see it as sort of the central bank, so to speak. It is responsible for regulating glucose and the amount of glucose that is in our blood. So when we sit down to a meal, our blood glucose naturally rises and insulin kicks in and it helps to regulate that rise. It helps to control that rise. And usually after approximately 2 hours of consuming that meal, our blood glucose is normalized as a result of insulin, which is a hormone. However, in diabetes, in diabetics, this regulation, this control is lost. Okay. And so even 5-6 hours after eating a meal, diabetics will have elevated levels of blood glucose, elevated levels of glucose in their blood because of either one, a lack of insulin, right? Which is notably known as type 1 diabetes, where your body doesn't make any insulin or makes very, very, very little. Or type 2, where your body does create some insulin, but your body is not able to respond appropriately to it.
Okay. So actually, I want to tell a story. I want to tell a story on what happened to me. So I went to work. I work overnight, mm-hmm. right? And I was feeling a little drowsy. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized I was tired and that I wasn't thinking straight. I was fatigued and that I was unable to perform my job. Mm-hmm. So I was able to go through the shift, right? And at one point I said, I'm going home now, but I just need to rest for a bit. So, you know, I turn the car on, have the air conditioning on, and 2-3 hours later, I feel a tap on, or heard a tap on my car. It was security asking, is everything all right, right? And I said, no, I'm just tired. You know, I work overnight, you know, I still don't catch myself. And I eventually drove home, and I went home, or eventually made it home, and I collapsed, mm-hmm. right? I fell ill, I tired, I needed sleep, and eventually I was taken to doctor's hospital. And there I met you and you start. And I want you to tell me at what stage for a diabetic or the sugar count, typically a person is admitted to the hospital and say, okay, it's bad, you know?
Well, there is no specific glucose level to mm-hmm. which a person would be admitted for a diabetic emergency. It's gonna differ for different persons. But the main thing of it is that with a diabetic emergency, mm-hmm. your glucose level is extremely high, usually greater than 250.
Okay, let's use that number. Mm-hmm. So usually greater than 250.
Yes.
So if my glucose is like 270, mm-hmm. is that a diabetic emergency?
Not in and of itself, not by itself. There are some other criteria mm-hmm. That would be used to establish a diabetic emergency. So you're going to have a lot of acid in your blood.
Okay.
Your blood is going to be acidic, essentially. Mm-hmm. You might see acid in the urine mm-hmm. as well. Ketones is what we call them in the urine. So there are other criteria besides the elevation of the glucose. Mm-hmm. But that definitely is a prime criteria that you need to have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 250. I'm going to go with that number, mm-hmm. and you say all of the other mm-hmm. Issues that mm-hmm. need to be occurring with that.
Right.
What was my glucose?
Well, the magic number for you was 1,680.
So see, I need you to repeat that. So because you're saying 250-ish is the time where you say, okay, more like you might be admitted with all the other mm-hmm. issues, right? Mm-hmm. 260, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and call this big number because mm-hmm. 250 is far from this 1,000 number. Call that number again.
Yeah, so 1,680 was Mr. Nuri's blood glucose upon admission to hospital.
So what does that mean?
Right. So you were in a severe diabetic emergency. We call that hyperglycemic, hyperosmolar state. And essentially, your glucose was so high, it made you lethargic, drowsy. You were extremely dehydrated because you were having frequent urination. And you kept trying to drink enough water to try and balance it out, but it just wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you were starting to have abdominal pains, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so you were very drowsy. And though you were not exactly in a coma, you are not in a comatose state, you were definitely on your way there, if that number were any higher. And let me just say as an important point, that's the highest that I've seen.
So I am now your record. You could say, oh,
yes.
you haven't reached a CA Nuri point yet. Or, oh my God, you're over a CA Nuri point. I am now on your watch.
Yeah, so that was the highest serum glucose, highest blood glucose I have ever seen. That was extremely high. And, you know, some persons have been admitted with much lower numbers and have had poor outcomes. So that was extremely high. Yes. Extremely high, and you know, we're glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. I was a little concerned. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
But I don't know what exactly caused diabetes because I thought I was healthy. I walk, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I mean, I like my food seasoned, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily. My wife don't necessarily have me eat salt,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily like sweets, but I love a Coke soda. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll drink about six Coke sodas per day.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm still a little confused on what happened to me. What caused me from being, I thought, a typical 40-plus-year-old mm-hmm. man who could walk 2, 3, 4 miles without being winded, you know, mm-hmm. to end up being in the hospital. What went wrong?
Right. So diabetes in particular, type 2, so that's the one where persons take tablets and may require insulin. That is largely genetic. So it's actually your genes, right?
My father died from hypertension.
Yeah.
You know, so I was always concerned with salt.
Yeah. So genetic predisposition essentially is the underlying cause of diabetes, and that genetic predisposition leads to insulin resistance. So your body just becomes resistant to the insulin that you make in type 2 diabetes. And that's because of genetics. And if you combine that with lifestyle practices, like being overweight, eating unhealthily, so you know, eating a lot of processed foods, eating a lot of foods.
I like
high
a Wendy's. I mean, let me call it a name. I like a fast food.
Eating a lot of foods high in saturated fats. Mm. That genetic predisposition, in conjunction with poor lifestyle, so obesity, being overweight, eating unhealthy foods, processed sugars, smoking, that combination can lead to type 2 diabetes.
And, you know, I don't have any vices because I don't drink, mm-hmm. right? I don't smoke, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I like a good Chinese food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I like a salt and pepper pork chop. That's my favorite, right?
Right?
And to know that this bad eating habit added or mm-hmm. contributed to my dilemma, I am concerned because I did not know that such a thing was a problem in the Bahamas. Is there a national problem with diabetes in the Bahamas?
Well, let me tell you, people wonder why we're having this discussion. Why is diabetes a problem? It's a huge problem. If you have long-standing, uncontrolled, sustained elevations in blood glucose, that will go on to cause complications. Multi-systemic complications.
What do you mean by complications?
Okay, well, first and foremost, diabetes, elevated levels of glucose in the blood for a long period of time, they affect the blood vessels mm-hmm. and the nerves in the body. When you affect the blood vessels and the nerves, you in turn affect the organs that those blood vessels supply, mm-hmm. right? The blood vessels are important because they bring oxygen, they bring nutrients, they bring all the important things for your brain, your heart, your kidneys, all of the important organs in your body to function. Mm-hmm. When those blood vessels are damaged as a result of diabetes, then those organs start to become dysfunctional. So for instance, in the eyes, diabetes is the fifth leading cause of blindness in the world, okay? As it relates to the brain and the heart, persons who are diabetic, they have a 2 to 3 time risk of having a stroke or a heart attack compared to somebody who does not have diabetes, because again, diabetes affects the vessels that supply those organs. In the kidneys, diabetes is one of the leading causes of end-stage renal disease and persons requiring dialysis, especially in our population, okay? In addition, if you are a diabetic and you're uncontrolled and you have these chronic, long-standing, high levels of glucose in the blood, you have difficulty with infections. So there's impaired wound healing, right? So whereas somebody who's not diabetic, if they have a cut, that may heal in a day or two. Diabetics, they have poor wound healing. They have slow wound healing, okay? And so that puts them at risk for diabetic ulcers that don't heal and can eventually progress to requiring amputations. In fact, diabetes is the leading cause of non-traumatic amputations in the world. So what that means is the only thing that causes more amputations, limb amputations, is war and conflict. Okay? In addition to, diabetes also affects the nerves, right? So diabetics, long-standing uncontrolled diabetics, they tend to lose sensation, right? Especially in the feet. So they can walk on a thumbtack and they don't feel anything. And then you know what happens is that thumbtack sits in their foot, it causes trauma, it becomes infected, and if you add the fact that they have poor wound healing to begin with, it sets up a vicious cycle for ulcer formation and for the development of really bad diabetic ulcers that can lead to amputation. In fact, I had a patient some time ago, his diabetes was so bad because mm-hmm. diabetes affects all the different types of nerves in the body. His diabetes was so bad that he could not sense when his bladder was full.
What?
And so he just used to wet himself. We call that autonomic neuropathy, which is just a fancy type of nerve damage, right? Or a different type of nerve damage. His diabetes was that bad that he could not determine when he was soiling himself. Okay? So, you know, diabetes has a lot of multisystemic complications. And also what's important to mention, too, diabetes causes erectile dysfunction.
What?
So for your male viewers, if they don't take anything else from this discussion, they need to note that long-standing, uncontrolled diabetes affects your ability to have a robust erection. Because, again, diabetes affects those blood vessels that bring blood to the penis and causes it to become engorged and for you to have an erection. And so you'll find that a lot of persons who have long-standing, uncontrolled diabetes, males, they will tell you that they have not had an erection for years. And so, you know, I say all of this to say that diabetes affects every facet of the body. And what's an important thing to mention, too, is that when you become blind, when you lose a limb, you then become disabled.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of persons who are being affected, and they are being affected in the prime of their working life, right, in their 30s and their 40s. And so when they develop these long-standing complications, they're no longer able to work. Mm-hmm. They're no longer able to provide for their family, especially if they are the breadwinner. And so, you know, it then leads to disability. Persons have to be removed from the workforce because, you know, they're blind, they've lost a limb, et cetera.
But Dr. Bannister, I have a text and I want to read the text.
Mm-hmm, no problem.
I want to know the signs because I'm not sure if Bahamian men, Bahamians in general, because that would affect women too, know what to look for to say, well, I think I need to go get checked up. But let me read this text and I want you to know, to tell me what type of signs people should look for. Okay, good day, Mr. Nuri. Oh my gosh, thank God you are okay. The number caused my eye to pop out of my head. Thank God all is well. Okay, but again, what type of signs should people say, okay, I need to get myself checked out?
So the earliest signs of diabetes would include frequent urination, including at night. So you're getting up 4, 5, 6 times at night to pee. Frequent thirst, and because you're thirsty, you're going to be drinking frequently, right? So frequent thirst, frequent consumption of water, and as the disease progresses, you may start to experience tingling in the hands and in the feet.
Definitely I had tingling in my feet for a while.
Right, okay. That's because of the nerve involvement. And then persons may also experience, some persons experience increased appetite, so they're eating more.
I eat a lot. I have a healthy appetite.
Because even though you have all of this glucose in the blood, right, this energy source, you can't use it. So you're just constantly eating. Some persons might start to develop sores that they just notice doesn't heal. You know, quickly, it takes a long time to heal. But I would say the earliest signs would be that frequent urination, frequent thirst, just feeling tired, lethargic. And unfortunately, I find that a lot of patients just tend to relegate those symptoms to the heat. Oh, it's just hot. That's why I'm drinking more water. And that's why I'm getting up. And so they tend to kind of ignore those until they develop a complication or until they become emergent, until they develop an emergency. And then they have to be admitted to hospital. And I will say, and I will add, that a large majority of persons, they find out their diagnosis when they're admitted to hospital in an emergency.
So most persons just don't know. Just when you get real sick is when you
That's when they find out officially that you're diabetic, right? And by that and all that time prior, these were the signs that they, you know, either didn't recognize as signs of diabetes or they just ignored it or whatever like that. But unfortunately, a lot of persons present for the first time in an emergency, diabetic emergency.
And I know you mentioned lead to blindness.
Yes.
And I was telling you that my sight has been impaired since I've gotten this. It's a mixture because now I could re-roll my glasses, but now I cannot function with my glasses to move about. Definitely something is wrong with my sight, right? I know you mentioned about your foot bottom, right? In terms of not feeling if you get cut.
Right.
So I'm constantly concerned about that, you know? But I want to know about some myths. since I've been diagnosed with diabetes, and they say type 2 diabetes, right? I've been bombarded with home care solutions. Drink this type of tea, this type of bush medicine, and this will cure you. This will get you off of the regimen that you placed me on. And I want you to comment on that, about these bush medicines from your professional now. Because I know you're behaving like me, so you hear that certain things may work.
Right.
But I want to hear your commentary for persons who are home and who are diabetic and also getting these at home advice. I want to hear your commentary on that.
Right. So this is a common question that I get a lot from my patients in general. They ask about natural remedies, herbal supplements, alternative therapies to pharmaceutical medications. And I will say that currently there's limited studies, limited research that has proven the effectiveness of herbal remedies, alternative therapies in treating and managing diabetes as a standalone. Okay? So in other words, there have been no alternative therapies that have been proven to be able to treat and manage diabetes on its own. Okay? Most patients will require the use of medications. So for those who are type 1 diabetic who don't produce insulin, they will require insulin.
That's type 1 automatically.
Type 1, yes. There's no other way to treat that, right? Your body is not producing the insulin. For those with type 2, the issue is insulin resistance. So you're making some insulin, but your body's resisting it. And they will also require medication. In some cases, some of them also require insulin as well. In regards to the herbal therapies and stuff like that, there have been some articles that talk about, things like ginger and all those other things. But,
that breadfruit leaf.
Yeah, and all those things. But again, nothing has been proven to effectively and adequately treat diabetes as a standalone. So you still have to take your medications. You still have to do your lifestyle modifications. So aside from medication, you have to lose weight if you're obese, right? You have to modify your diet, right? So it's not going to be enough to just take your medication and still eat the donuts, still fill your lemonade with white sugar, still drink your sodas, six, seven sodas a day.
Dr. Banner, have you ever tasted lemonade with brown sugar?
No.
Because I have yet to taste that that Muslim lemonade, and I'm on my way there. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find out how I can work that Muslim lemonade. That's a different topic altogether.
Yes.
But I want to talk about lifestyle change. Mm-hmm.
Yes, lifestyle is important.
You started to talk about that. I know I have an appointment with a dietitian at Doctor's Hospital after this, right? But I want you to give commentary on what do you mean I need to change my lifestyle?
Right. So obesity is one of the main risk factors for development of diabetes, right? Obesity produces insulin resistance. So we tell our patients to lose weight. Losing all of those fat cells will help to make your diabetes a lot more manageable. Okay, so losing weight is very important. That's one of the main lifestyle modifications that persons should employ. And then changing your diet. It makes no sense in taking the medication if you're still eating the same bad foods. And it's not just sugar, because people think that if you eat a lot of sugar, you become diabetic.
I want to talk about sweets, but don't want to get you off course.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But that's not entirely true. It's important to try to avoid those foods that can spike your glucose, right? Mm-hmm. And that's usually those processed foods. And you also have to avoid very fatty foods, right? Those foods that are laden in saturated fats, right? Which is, again, a lot of processed foods, right? All of those things add to obesity, right? All of those things add towards heart disease. And so you really have to adjust your diet, not only in terms of sweets, but just in general in terms of fats and all of that. And so a good lifestyle modification is weight loss, adjusting your diet. And it's difficult for a lot of people. And so I encourage persons to seek the services of a dietitian to help them along that journey, because they're going to tell you about which foods will cause your blood sugar to go up versus those which will not cause it to spike.
Mm-hmm.
And they will also tell you about moderation and quantity, because we tend to overeat in this population, right? And we tend to have an overabundance of carbohydrates in our diet. And so they're going to tell you how to shift some of that to vegetables, right? To leaner meats, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just, oh, you can't eat sweets, mm-hmm. right? It's really modifying all the food groups,
yes.
right? And avoiding those processed foods and everything like that. And another important thing, too, if you are a smoker, you need to stop.
Stop altogether.
Altogether, because smoking will increase your risk for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, smoking in conjunction with diabetes will increase your risk of heart disease many, many fold, okay? Because smoking, like diabetes, also affects those vessels, those very important vessels that bring blood and nutrients and oxygen to our important organs.
Okay, I see I have a caller here, and I will let the caller engage you.
Okay.
Producer, can you patch that caller through, please? Welcome, caller. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Wonderful. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a dietitian, but I can tell you one thing. You need to get off them Coke. If any bad soda, Coke is the worst one.
Coke is worse. But see, I work nights now, and that Coke soda used to get me up.
You need to get off those Coke.
Yes.
If you clean your turned bowl,
yes.
You cut, take some meat, cut it up, put it in it. You go back about 7 days later, you only see the meat.
Oh, God.
I'm telling you, you need to get, and then be careful with the big C, eating out of those things, because they use a lot of processed chemicals in their seasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I don't know why in the Bahamas, why we got to use Morton salt that is shipped from Inagua to the United States, and we buy it back to the sodium dioxide, the silica, all those things to stop us from caking, and we get our natural corn salt here, or you could use the pink Himalayan salt.
Okay.
And then with sweetener, you could use agave, sparingly. You could use the coconut palm sugar or the monk fruit.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are made from plants.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you need to, get off sodas all together, and you will find yourself. Try to drink a lot of natural coconut water. Replace the Coke, that Coke, with mm-hmm. the Coke, natural coconut water. And let me give you a hint. When you go to the stores that is on the road setup, don't buy the water that is already in those pitcher containers, because they be sitting up in the sun all day and they leaching, the sun hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
So all that chemicals in the water is leaching because the sun is hitting onto it. Make sure the coconut is still whole. Let them back it open in front of you and then pour it in the container. Because I use the pink salt. I do marathon running, and the only thing I use, I don't use Gatorade because you got the pink, the green, the yellow, all the different colors. That's FC food coloring, and they're carcinogenic. They're being known to cause cancer in the body. So you could put water, put a little bit of pink salt or the Himalayan salt or the Arpon salt, and that hydrates the body, natural coconut water. Especially with this heat now, that I tell athletes, you're there in the sun, because all the electrolyte is being coming out of the body, so you need to put it back. So that salt has 92 minerals inside of it. And then you could go plant-based. People say, but Doug, how you can get your strength in your protein? I said, you check the elephant. Who's the strongest? The buffalo, the rhinoceros. They don't eat meat, but they pull in the leaves and the grass of the ground, and they eat it. And the processed food, try to get off all box processed food. If you can do your chickpeas, you can make sure they're dry in the package. Don't use it in the can because it's loaded with sodium.
Man, I appreciate you, man. I mean, I wrote down one or two of these things, and I truly appreciate it.
I'm telling you, because any restaurant, you got to be careful to the restaurant because they use that Morton salt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's loaded with all kinds of different additives to stop it from caking.
Mm-hmm.
No restaurant in the Bahamas should be using Morton salt. You get corn salt all over this island, this Bahamas. Why? You can buy it from Inagua, and then you can ship it back, and you got the corn salt. Actually, no boat should be going there to Acklins with Morton salt on it.
And I truly appreciate it, right? And we're going to take a quick break right now. This has been Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I'm talking to Dr. Bannister about how I almost died and how she brought me back, thank God. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Girl, you see how poor I look funny? money all black up yesterday.
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after to churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
So what you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business, then Jack come after me, and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll-free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and we could text them. And the messages get on mix-up before it leave your phone, so nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I'm having a conversation with my doctor. See how I claim you? I call claim you as my doctor. Dr. Bannister, Diane Bannister, who was the physician who was responsible for me while I was in ICU at Doctors Hospital. And we're having a conversation about diabetes and how it had impacted me, how it had impacted the people in the Bahamas. But I want to talk statistics, right? Mm-hmm. I want to talk how prevalent is this? What type of numbers is diabetes inside the Bahamas? So I can let you, if you know, can you comment on that?
So I'll start with global statistics. So based on the World Health Organization, as of 2014, there was estimated to be 432 million persons with diabetes worldwide. Fast forward to 2019, that's based on the International Diabetes Federation, that number rose to 470 million. And now they estimate that by 2030, there will be 570 million persons worldwide living with diabetes. And by 2045, they estimate that that number would have risen to 700 million.
So this is a problem.
So yeah, so we're tracking towards a billion persons eventually in the next 20 plus years who will be diabetic. And so the global burden is increasing. And it's particularly prevalent in low to middle income countries. So the Bahamas is considered a middle income country. And so they're seeing increased prevalence in those environments. And it's still a huge problem where obesity is a huge problem.
Obesity is a problem here in the Bahamas.
So obesity and diabetes, you know, they tend to correlate a lot. Now, locally, what I found is that our prevalence is hovering around 14%. So 14.2%. So we're actually in the...
No, I don't understand. Are you saying 14% of our population?
So 14% of our adult population, and that's between the ages of 20 to 80, are diabetic.
What?
Yes.
That's a lot of people, you know.
Yeah. So that's around 14%. That was the last estimate that I saw. So we are in the top 26 countries with highest prevalence of diabetes, and I'm almost certain we're in the top three in the region. Hmm. Okay. So diabetes is a huge problem. And you know, during the height of the COVID pandemic, so 2020, the latter part of 2020 and then 2021, we found that a lot of persons who were sick, who required ventilation, had to go on a breathing tube, and who unfortunately and ultimately succumbed to the disease, a lot of them were obese and diabetic. So that was probably our most prevalent risk factors during the height of the pandemic. So diabetes is really far-reaching, and I mean it's far-reaching in terms of its impact, basically.
Okay, I see I have another caller there, and I want to make sure as many callers mm-hmm. get through. Mm-hmm. Caller, are you there?
Yes, good morning. How you doing, Mr. Nuri?
How you doing, 52?
Yeah, I'm all right. And good morning to your guest.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I'm sorry for your situation, CA Nui, but thing is, I wanted to make a comment on the insulin, right, and the glucose. I spoke with Dr. Archie just before, and so I guess they do have a gold standard test, which would be a glycohemoglobin. I think they call it the A1C or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, is it easier to do the glucose or the insulin test? Because they seem to just focus on the glucose. And I noticed when they do the insulin test, they do a lot of other tests with that to really verify the diabetes, right? And so it's kind of tricky. The fact that you could have the hyperinsulinemia, and then it doesn't have to mean you have diabetes, right? So do they say, well, what time you? They give you a specific time to eat? Because, you know, like, I had two blood sugar tests. One was 92, and then I noticed one was 132, and the guys, I told them I just finished eating the meal, so maybe that was why it was high, but I've never had a problem with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give out some general information with the guy with the salt, what he was saying was correct, but the fact that what people don't realize is the salt is being separated from the sea. So because you have precipitated it, it's still not in its natural form, and then they turn around and heat it to 1,200 degrees and put some adjuvants in it. So what you're doing is you're separating it from the way God made it. So when it reaches the body, you have a concentration of sodium, and then you have a problem with intra and extracellular movements. So it isn't like salt causes the high blood pressure. It's just an imbalance of the salts causes high blood pressure. And some advice to the diabetics, because I see people were saying, like, the fasting. I think they should be, in fasting, we have to be careful, as let's say you're diabetic and you want to control what you're putting in there. Remember now that the main source of energy for the body is carbohydrates, whether it should be complex carbohydrates. But as the body goes without carbohydrates or carbohydrates is depleted, what happens is the body then turns to fat. And then when fat is depleted, the body turns to protein through glucogenesis to make sugar. And so when the body turns to fat, remember now it's called ketosis. So because it's an incomplete and you have other metabolic ingredients that are harmful to the body and it's incomplete, when the body turns to make fat for energy, that's not natural. So you have a lot of ketones and toxins building up in the bloodstream. So they should be able to lose weight in a healthy way. So when you tell people to lose weight, you really should instruct them how to do so because it is harmful. And I have a book here in front of me. It's called Intra and Extracellular Fluid, and it deals strictly, specifically with starvation, and it explains to you specifically what can happen when the body uses fat as a form of energy and protein. It's not natural. You see what I'm saying? Have a good day, Eric.
I appreciate all that. You want to have a comment on that?
Yeah,
so
just to make a few comments. So it's not hyperinsulinemia. It's insulin resistance. That is the issue in type 2 diabetes. So your body is making some insulin, but the primary issue is that your body, your cells, are not able to respond to it adequately. So that's the problem there. There are several different criteria by which you can make a diagnosis for diabetes, right? You can measure your fasting glucose. So that means you basically come in, you haven't eaten anything since yesterday evening, your supper or whatever like that, and they can test your sugar to see what it is, right? Greater than 200, we can make a diagnosis of diabetes. We can also do the A1C that 52 mentioned. And that's basically a special blood test that really tells us how controlled you have been in the previous 3 months, because it measures the amount of glucose that is connected to your red blood cells or has stuck to your red blood cells. And so once that number is over 6.5, we can also make a diagnosis of diabetes. We can also have you come in, have what we call a glucose tolerance test. We basically have you come in and drink a cup of sugar water, and then we test your glucose 2 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
To see whether you are naturally doing what you're supposed to do, which is the insulin bringing your blood glucose down. If that remains elevated over a certain number, we can also make a diagnosis of diabetes. So, you know, there are several ways in which to make a diagnosis. As it relates to the fat and diet and all of that, first and foremost, any diet that one undertakes should always be done in conjunction with a doctor and a dietitian, right? Because you don't want to do anything that would bring harm. You don't want to have an imbalanced diet where you miss out on important nutrients, et cetera, like that. So I would say definitely do it and do it with under the auspices of a physician as well as in conjunction with a dietitian. The issue with, again, obesity produces insulin resistance, right? So that's the reason why there is a push for persons to lose weight, because when you lose weight, you actually have better control of your diabetes. So that's where the weight loss comes in. That's where the weight loss becomes important.
Okay. I see I have one or two more phone calls. I want to push them in before we go. Go ahead, caller. Thank you for holding.
Good morning, Mr. Dury. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thank God I'm still here.
Back here, you guess. You know, Mr. Dury, I was an active person when I was much younger, you know, different sports and so forth. Never had a problem going to the doctor once a year to do my annual, every time around my birthday. That type of thing was a regimen. And then all of a sudden, when I became 50, one day the doctor said, you're a diabetic now, you know. I said, how could I just become a diabetic?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you know, I'd stopped playing sports and so forth. And then my sugar started being up around 300 and all that type of thing. And after a while, I decided I'm going to change. I was on the metformin. I never went to the insulin. I got to start the metformin pills. And then I had problems swallowing them. And then I said, I could try something. Well, let me start with the leaf and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I started boiling like the guava leaf, the soursop leaf, the moringa leaf, the neem leaf, the avocado leaf. And I started using them as my tea. I cut down the sugars and salt. And all of a sudden, I came down to 112.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back to the doctor, he said, he didn't say nothing. He didn't prescribe my new pills. He said, Sparky, how do you get your sugar down so low?
Mm-hmm.
I told him I was doing the natural leaves and so forth. The thing is, he congratulated me on the leaves, but he still wrote up the prescription with me to get the metformin. I said, well, am I okay? I don't have the sugar. Why do I still have to go get this metformin? He said, you should still stay on them. I wonder why they don't tell us about the natural foods rather than just mocking salt in all our food. The foods that we import, if it's so important to the medical world about the Bahamians getting so sick, why don't they advertise the government as to the watch what food we import? Because we go into the supermarket, the tomatoes, we don't know what they spray on them, the pesticides,
mm-hmm.
all the different things, the ingredients they put in the soil to make them grow year-round, out of season when they're not to be. We eat a bunch of garbage and don't know.
Mm.
We got some people around here so big they can't get inside their own car. And I know we see them. And they walking down the road, and if they can't look in the mirror and see that they sick, something wrong. You go to the hospital sometime, and they telling us we sick with diabetes. And some of the nurses can hardly get in their uniform. Oh,
and I appreciate you, Sparky. And I
for big and fat.
And I appreciate you. And I didn't notice one or two. But I have another call.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome.
Good morning to you and your guests.
Yes.
Good morning.
I will appreciate if you, you need to bring her back.
And I need to bring her back.
You bring her back, you interview her. Because what we having people calling and they saying they ain't no doctor, but they're still giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't approve of that.
I understand.
You know? Because if there are times you need to use certain sugar in the body. Because if you have no sugar and you've been a diabetic, you could fall out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, your insulin drop low, you could fall out. And then what happened then? So I would like for you to bring her back and let her advise us on what to do. Instead of, you know, you have people calling in and stating this and talking about, you know, things what they, you know, I'd rather hear what the doctor say.
And I appreciate that.
And then one more other thing I want to say.
Go ahead.
Also, diabetic, some people have that in their genes. That's the word. I don't know if I'm using the right word. Because you have young people that is diabetic, and you have people who are born diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like her to comment on that. But again, please bring her back, and this time when you bring her back,
mm-hmm.
interview her as long as you could, so we could get better information instead of having these people say they ain't a doctor and they're telling it this and saying this and that. So that could be confusing.
I appreciate the call. I empathize and I understand exactly what he said,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to speak on spiking. So, because sometimes my mm-hmm. sugar dropped to 40.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know, what do I do? And sometimes it goes up to 180 mm-hmm. to 200. And again, I want to know, what do I do or what caused that, right? And mm-hmm. I still want to go in detail with that, but I see that mm-hmm. I'm running out of time quickly,
mm-hmm.
and I still have people who are calling in. And I'm going to take one more call,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to talk about you again. So that's what I'm going to do. So I'll take this one call, and then I'll mm-hmm. go back to you. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, CA, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Banner, sir.
Good morning, sir.
just a very quick question here. With the concerns with diabetes, and of course, diabetes have been on the rise in this country for quite some time, because, as Nuri so rightfully said, and many of us have mentioned it on numerous occasions, the importation of foods in particular in this country. I don't know of any agency here that actually tests the quality and tests food before, especially meat that come in. Has any studies been done locally that you know of the fast food restaurants? For instance, you know, they deal with fats. We don't know if they're polyunsaturated or unsaturated fat. But has any studies been done to see the quality of food, despite what they advertise? Has any studies been done? And I'll tell you why I asked that question. Right now, as it stands, growing up, we are in the 60s and 70s. Our parents mostly, we got most of our foods, like, from the trees. We ate a lot of berries. We ate a lot of cocoa plums. We ate a lot of the natural stuff. But as you notice today, the average school or children of between the ages of 0 and, let's say, 15, they actually eat fast food every day. And so if diabetes is really a concern of our government and our health system, then where are the studies and who's doing studies to determine how much this stuff impacts our health on a daily basis? That is the question I would like to ask. Thank you so much for taking my call, Nuri.
I appreciate that, man. That's an appropriate question, and that's something that we need to lobby and speak on. Because if processed food is causing damage to the Bahamian children and Bahamians in general, that there needs to be some kind of PSA to come out and say, well, this is where we at. This is our statistics. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I'm going to invite you back to just speak on that. Right?
I just want to respond to the gentleman's question. So I am not personally aware of any local studies that have been conducted in regards to the consumption of processed foods and its impact on the health of the general Bahamian population. But we have a lot of studies that have been done in developed countries like the United States, which also has similar obesity rates like us. And we can extrapolate and see the effects of the rise in fast food along with the rise in obesity, along with the rise in diabetes. So we can see that correlation just by looking at other countries. Mm-hmm. But as far as local studies, no, I am not aware of any that have been conducted, but I think it's very important, that those types of studies are done to try and help govern public policy and stuff like that in terms of food importation and everything like that. And just want to quickly kind of speak to what Sparky had said too. He mentioned that, you know, he took herbal stuff and his sugar, quote unquote, was fine after that. Why does he have to take his metformin? I just want to reiterate, because a lot of some of my patients, they tend to forego their medications and they go to alternative medications. And for the vast majority of them, based on my experience, they come back with uncontrolled diabetes and the complications of uncontrolled diabetes because they have not been taking medications and they have not been doing the lifestyle modifications that they should. So I want to caution persons to, you know, be careful about just coming off your medication. You know what I mean? You know, speak to your doctor, have a discussion with your doctor. You know what I mean? There may be some benefit to drinking ginger and lemon, you know, because you don't have to use sugar if you don't want to, and that's going to help your glucose from spiking. But there is no evidence to suggest that that's the only thing that you can use to control your diabetes. And you need to be careful, because if you don't, then you're going to be wrought with all of those complications that there's nothing that you can do about it. The blindness and the limb amputations and the erectile dysfunction and the increased risk of stroke and heart attack. In fact, for diabetics, the number one cause of mortality, death, is heart attacks. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I caution persons to be careful about just, you know, utilizing on squarely just herbal medications and not speaking to their doctors, not getting good advice. Yeah.
Yes. Before we go, we have 3 minutes. I want to talk about the associations that you were involved with. Mm-hmm. I know that you were part of some kind of internal medicine company type thing.
Right.
And so, I just want to know about that.
Right. So I'm an internist, first and foremost. I do work in the public sector, and I also do work in the private sector. I do work with a group of other internists, and we provide hospital-based and clinical outpatient patient care as well, the Internal Medicine Associates group. So that's where I'm affiliated. But I also do work in the public sector as well.
And what do they do exactly? Because you just went right over
hospital-based medicine. Mm-hmm. So like how you presented with your diabetic emergencies and other complex chronic medical conditions, you know, a number of things, heart attacks, diabetic emergencies, hypertensive emergencies, the whole gamut.
So you do some kind of consultancy type thing? So, I mean, because if I have people who want to contact you and say, hey, this is what I'm presented to, I want to know, how do I contact you?
Okay, so we operate out of the Luden Clinic, which is attached, which is in the building across from Doctors Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to leave the number with you. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But that's where they can contact us if they'd like, you know, to be seen or to be assessed, et cetera, et cetera. They, you know, they're looking for a physician, et cetera. That's where we operate.
Good. Mm-hmm. So you see that I had two or three callers already say, I need to bring you back, mm-hmm. right? They want to go in detail about spiking. What do you do when your numbers, your glucose numbers fall flat? What do you do when your glucose numbers go skyrocketed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I will invite you back. So we can talk more about hypertension, because we didn't talk about that at all.
Right.
And so we can talk more about diabetes and how to manage it and how what to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just delighted that you took the time to come here,
mm-hmm.
and just to comment on what happened to me,
mm-hmm.
and how for me to manage it forward.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'm glad to see that you're doing much better.
I look good, hey? I do look good.
Let's try not to break any records.
No, not anymore.
Again.
And I can say that I passed the Chinese restaurant straight now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Good.
But I still feel for that salt and pepper pork chop.
But small steps.
Yes. This has been Guardian Radio in AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and I had a conversation with Dr. Bannister, and she was talking about how I almost died from diabetes and how I managed. I'm still here. But I see you again tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.